Now, if you go back to the 70s, you will be very familiar with this band, The Meters, with People Say. It's from their 1974 hit album, Rejuvenation. And it's message music. It's political music. Imagine, they're saying, powers of today are so confused, giving everybody in the world the blues. Food is getting high. The fuel is getting low. The rich are getting richer, and the po' keep getting po'. That's message music right there. Featuring Ziggy Mortaliste on drums, Art Neville, yes, that last name should mean something to you, the Neville brothers on keyboards, Leo Nocentelli on guitar, and George Porter Jr. on bass. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it's Free Your Mind Friday. It's the gathering place for the exchange of information, opinions, and ideas. And on Free Your Mind Friday, your thoughts, your analyses, your takes on the reality that we are all experiencing, these are the things that take center stage, and you are in the driver's seat at 888-874-4888. Major developments with regard to the topic we've been discussing for the past 2 days in earnest, upon the conclusion of the Big Six primaries and the prediction that Hillary Clinton is the presumptive Democratic nominee. And Bernie Sanders, well, we don't know what Bernie's going to do. What will Bernie do? But we have other things also in play, so we'll hear from you. You are the persons, determining where we go today. It's Free Your Mind Friday, 888-874-4888. Chicago gets us started today. Henry, you're on the air.
Hey, Eutrice, how's it going?
Great. How are you?
Doing good. Doing good. Tried to get on the show yesterday, but I guess I called a little too late. But I wanted to talk about, kind of touch on what, you know, what we've been talking about the last 2 days in regards to the election. But obviously, you know, we all knew this, that, you know, Bernie was going to basically sell out to the Democratic Party. So I guess in reality, turning to the common political system is no use to us. So we have to start to put matters into our own hands now. And what I mean by that is we're going to have to start this revolution, you know, on our own. So what I was thinking about was tactics that we have to organize as a community. And what I mean by tactics is that we have to start formulating stuff that will get the attention, you know, of these politicians and of the system that, you know, that put us in this position of oppression. And I mean, we could even look at, you know, the history of this country where, you know, one of the things that started the revolution was when they stopped paying taxes to the British. And I feel like that is like a first tactic that we should probably look into as not paying taxes, because as you know, Illinois has a problem passing a budget. So they haven't passed a budget in over a year. So I was suggesting to people, well, you know, we shouldn't give Illinois any taxes until they pass the budget. I think that would start, you know, revel things up a little bit. However, the thing is too, is that we have to do it as a block, because, you know, obviously, you know, they could get us on tax evasions or what, you know, whatever they want to charge us with. But I think if we do it as a group and we can agree to do it as a group, that would cause a lot of stir with, you know, with people in downstate Illinois. Also too, the education system here and all over the country is being attacked, through, you know, politically and financially. And one of the things that I think we should start doing and we should start thinking about as a community is homeschool. Because I think the problem, you know, with the educational system, not only just not funding it the way it should be funded and politicians and other people stealing, you know, from the coffers of the public school system, and with the rise of the charter school system, I think homeschooling might be the way to go in regards to educating our children. Or if you still want to put your children in traditional schools, we should probably put them in private schools. But I think the thing is that me having experience working in the public school system, a lot of funds coming from federal money depends on the attendance of the children. And I feel if we take that away from them, then, you know, we would definitely get their attention in regards to making the schools better. But, you know, like I said, it should, you know, we should formulate this as a block.
So, all right. Well, I want to use that very theme because you said it about three times, the word mm-hmm. block. And this means organization.
Mm-hmm.
When you start talking about blocks, a political block, a voting block, you're talking about an organized community, and that's where it starts. So I'm going to ask you, how are you going to get this galvanizing of political power to get done what you want to get done? Where do you start?
Well, I mean, you have to start with the people that's around you. And at that point, you can get the message out and basically talk about the things that we have as an advantage. And then at that point, you know, if the message spreads, and in today's, you know, modern society of the high speed information and social media, you know, we should be able to get the message out and get our point across in regards to, you know, how we can tackle the system. Because I know some people, you know, when we talk about going up against the system, you have two groups of people. You have people who are too scared to challenge the system, or you have gung-ho people who are not tactical and just want to pick up a gun and, you know, and start this revolution in a bloody way, which is, you know, not the way to do it, but, you know, being more tactical in regards to fighting the system. And like I said, you know, not paying taxes or starting an educational revolution would be more feasible ways, you know, to fight this system.
Henry, you gave us two incredibly powerful words today: block and system.
Mm-hmm.
Block and system. They actually involve the same thing, which is organizing. A system is a scientifically constructed method of achieving and maintaining power. A block is the way you get it. But with those two words, if we concentrate on those two words alone, we're going to get somewhere, because that is exactly where we need to go. We have to understand that whatever it is we do politically, we have to have a block of people. We have to have a group of a wider than yourself. You can't do anything, make that kind of change in just by yourself. You're running against the tide that way. Here you want to concentrate on building a base, a political base with shared interests, and clearly fixated on the idea of exercising the leverage, the political leverage that you have. And as a block, and you devise your system. What is your system? Those are two really, really, really important words. So thanks for contributing those two words to us today. I'm sure we're going to have people addressing them during the course of the program. Thanks for calling and getting us started today. Let's go to Philadelphia. Clara, you on the air.
Thank you, Teresa. Hello to everyone.
Thank you. And hello to you too, Clara. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I feel good about a couple of things. One is the fact that I'm following the last caller who talked about blocks. He talked about, in another way, a block of people. I think a block of organized people. I'm thinking of a block as a beginning of organization, the block system here that we have. About a year ago, I think I said I was going to try to become the block captain and begin organizing in that way. Well, I found out we have a block captain, and I'm aligning myself with her. And we're going to do some community-building activities. I think, in answer to your question, how do you actually organize in a way that is effective? I think, as I've said before, one of the major parts, one of the most powerful ways in this time and place is through food, growing food. People who you would never know would be interested are interested because people are hungry. And people have time. They're out of work. And there are lots of spaces here in Philadelphia. And when you're in a garden, you can talk and you can engage. And it's amazing what can be done. I like the idea of just opting out of this dying system and developing our own parallel systems of power and integrity. And that's pretty much what I like the idea of the homeschooling, but that would be a part of this whole parallel, parallel process of community development. Are you still there? I got lost.
Yes. Okay. No, you're not. I hear you.
Okay.
How does this parallel system devise itself to incorporate the collective views of any particular community?
Wait a minute. Would you restate that, please? I'm not sure I understand what you're saying.
You're correct about the idea. I was trying to have you follow through with the comment about devising parallel systems.
Okay,
do you have
okay.
any further ideas about how parallel systems come into being? What are some of the ingredients for getting that started?
Okay. What I'm thinking of is the urgent need for basic life services, such as education, health, housing. As people's needs are known and recognized, we tend to become more innovative, and we have more minds working on it. I mean, I think that the necessity of these services and resources will be the impetus for developing some really powerful ways of living.
Mm-hmm. Well, good ideas. And you're building on from Chicago. You're building on Henry's ideas. Thanks so much, Clara, for your call today. We go to New York next, where Joel is waiting. Hello, Joel.
Hey, Utrecht. How are you doing?
Great. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I'm fine. So I'd like to jump into this discussion. I'd like to move back a little bit and talk a little bit about the connection of neoliberal capitalism to the politics that we face, and where all this leads us, and what kind of movement I think we should perhaps establish. I might say very quickly with regard to organization, whatever it is that we the people want to do, that just speaking personally, I really think that what we did in the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee in the 1960s is a very good template to follow. We were, without tooting our own horn, we were probably the most essential on-the-ground civil rights movement of the time. And I have to tell you that the SCLC, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, really depended upon us to do the heavy day-by-day work in communities. And whatever kind of organization that's established, it's hard work, and you need very hard work. You have to be persistent and consistent. And at the same time, you have to see yourself in a kind of selfless way and see yourself making some very significant sacrifices, including even getting arrested. So this is no waltz in the park. Having said that, I really would like to connect what we're talking about today to neoliberal capitalism, because that's what it is that we're really fighting. And like all versions, previous versions of capitalism, it is a greedy and hubristic beast. It exists to feed its already bloated being. It has no soul. It exists, in fact, outside of greed, because it's an amoral phenomenon. But when the greedy participate, and we all know who they are, the damage done is exacerbated exponentially. So where does that leave us? Are movements for reform pointless? Are all those millions who work for Sanders, were they wasting their time? Is the fight for $15 minimum wage movement a movement for nothing? How about Black Lives Matter? How about movements against drones and wars and struggles around gender issues and women's rights? All of this, we're not wasting our time with any of this, especially given the current situation. And without these and other movements for social justice, the nation will be much further down the road to a purely authoritarian corporate state, you know, ruled by the small-minded and the money changers than we already are. And these movements, and those like them, not only keep the fascists at bay, they also provide the entire population with alternatives to the world the 1% would like to make permanent. And in this kind of political climate, defined by monopoly capitalism and its human clones and the banks, the stock exchanges, the Pentagon, and the other halls of power, any resistance in the name of progressive social justice is absolutely crucial. And at the same time, this is not nearly enough. We have to go much further. Our challenge has to be much broader and deeper, and broader in its reach, deeper in its analysis. And we must acknowledge that neoliberal capitalism is a problem. And in doing so, we'll then understand that capitalism is itself a problem, and that we have to fight it. And this is where the broad in its reach part comes in. The popularity of the Sanders campaign and the struggle to raise the minimum wage to 15 proves to me that such breath exists. And if we can deepen the analysis of those campaigns to one that analyzes and challenges capitalism the way Sanders didn't, to one that analyzes and challenges capitalism on its fundamental claims that it is an economic system that works for humanity, and this can't be emphasized enough, making that analysis an essential part of our organizing, it will then be possible to involve almost all people in every other social justice campaign, making a broad popular coalition possible. I mean, imagine a movement of groups and individuals dedicated to ending capitalism. If one can't imagine that, at least one can imagine a movement dedicating to ensuring free and affordable health care, quality public education, housing for every individual, a movement dedicated to ending the stranglehold of the military-industrial complex and the financial industry on our lives, a movement to end imperial wars, a movement to end police brutality and murder, a movement to end systemic racism and make reparations to those so wronged by the racist history of the nation.
What I'm saying is, if you can imagine such a movement, then you can imagine a movement to end capitalism, since these are symptoms of that cancer upon humanity's soul. And it seems to be strategically smart to begin with a movement around these reforms with an approach that encourages an understanding that capitalism, neoliberal capitalism, is at the root of the problems the movement hopes to reform. And the last thing I want to say is, how would that movement take shape? What would its various manifestations be? Would it be a political party, a movement in the streets? You know, these, I think, are very difficult and essential questions. And,
but, you know, I have to say, mm-hmm. we have the ingredients still at work. I mean, my sense is that the biggest unfinished business here of the movement, and there is a movement, it did, in fact, begin with, Bernie Sanders did have a movement. He still does. But they're walking away and refusing to teach him a lesson. Look, the attitude has to be so clearly defined that it is not like the previous attitudes where they say, well, we gave it a good shot and everybody walks away. No, you still have vested capital in Bernie Sanders, and compel him to behave differently. Compel him and the Democratic Party to respond. And you still, the war is still on. This is my point.
Well,
Jesse Jackson was allowed to walk away scot-free and bastardize this movement of the Rainbow Coalition. Dennis Kucinich did the same thing. Obama did the same thing. And they are still trading on the emotional memory of the voters who supported them and these so-called movements, even though they totally corrupted the intent and they capitulated completely. Bernie Sanders has to be compelled. He has to be made to perform. And if he is not to perform, they have to go after him and say, listen, we have come to the end of the line of this business of raising, or Hillary Clinton too. You make an investment, a heavy investment, and then it is arrogated unto the self. This is now about Bernie Sanders. No, it's not. You still have to account. And is one thing you can do. Sorry. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Actually, I think we're there. What I'm saying has absolutely nothing to do with the Democratic Party. I mean, I think that, Dan, we both know, and you've been talking about this for days. And in fact, we've all been talking about this. The Democratic Party is a graveyard. It is a cemetery for all social movements. My own view is that, even though it's so important to ask these questions now, personally, I'm a firm believer in creating a movement, a left movement in the streets, like that was created in West Germany, for instance, in the 1960s and the 70s. This was a radical left movement of groups and individuals that opposed the coalition of social democrats and Christian democrats that were doing what the Democrats and Republicans are doing in this country now. And since the coalition of Democrats, social democrats, and Christian democrats controlled much of the government, the left in the street pressured the system from the street in local elections and other manifestations. And the thinking behind this is that by not supporting a candidate or a party, but important radical issues instead, by defining these issues, as I said before, then you can have a resurgent left that will be able to begin to exercise power and begin to create movements. And the movement will exist for people, not for candidates. If the candidates subscribe to the movement's politics, they would join the movement, not have the movement join their pursuit for power. And it has to be emphasized over and over. We can't leave it up to the Bernies of this world to create that movement. That's never been his thing. We must do that by bringing together the multitude of issues, approach them through an anti-capitalist, an anti-imperialist, an anti-racist lens, and move forward. And we might just save the planet. And I think a good way to start is to go to Philadelphia at the end of July and to tell these people what we think of them.
Well, I think they should have a clue long before then, long before July. They need to have a message sent now, and particularly Bernie Sanders himself needs to be sent the message that in his constituency there's a widespread view that he has capitulated and betrayed the very thing that he set out to do. Thanks a lot for your call, Joe.
Sure.
Much to
sure.
think about. Let's go to New York again with Lincoln. Hello, Lincoln. You're
Hi,
on the air.
Hello. How are you?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
I miss you on WVI.
Well, I'm here on TRN.
And I'm also beginning to miss Gary on WVI on Fridays. And that was such a foolish move because so many listeners, they lose on Fridays at the 12 o'clock hour. Yes, I want to address several things. First of all, what was in my mind before I heard any of the previous people. And then I want to touch on some of the things of the previous people. I listened to Obama's endorsement speech of Hillary. And Obama's endorsement speech of Hillary shows the complete disrespect and disregard that politicians have for the voters and how stupid and gullible they think the voters are. Now think of this. Obama, in his endorsement speech, said, Hillary is the most qualified person for the presidency he has ever seen. So why did he run against her if that is really how he thinks?
Well, he seemed to be offended the first time she suggested that if you elect Obama, he will have to do on-the-job training and on-the-job learning to be president. And he took offense at that. But now, apparently, it doesn't hurt him that much as he makes his exit.
But can you imagine that? He says, and based on the way he said it, the way he articulated it, as if he was even suggesting that she was even better than himself. I mean, which I was never an Obama supporter because I...
But, Lincoln, the speech itself aside, what do you think, how do you interpret the speech? What was the purpose of the speech, and what is the significance of the speech, in your view?
Well, the speech is usual vacuous speeches, and like, for example, and even... So-called journalists, I think, missed the point. Because, for example, even yesterday I was listening to someone on this woman talk on Amy Goodman's show, and even when Obama spoke, he said Bernie Sanders brought energy to...
I'm not talking about these things. I'm talking about in the larger scheme of things. Why would the outgoing president be so effusive in his praise of a person who actually is being investigated federally with an eye toward prosecution, one hopes, who was, in fact, his political opponent and who said rather nasty things about him? What would account for the sudden romance, do you think, right now?
But there was no such a thing as a sudden romance. And that's where we are all making the big mistake. And I'll tell it to you like this, because politics is more simple than we try to complicate it. I heard someone say this about Obama, and it's true about many of the other candidates, including Bernie Sanders. He said, Obama does not have any true convictions, and Obama just like being president. And you see, we have to stop and start defying these people and realizing that these people don't understand the true purpose of a politician. Because, simply put, the true purpose of a politician is to serve the people for the good of the people. And it's not for us to make celebrities of them, which is what we all do. And the true answer is educating the people. But when we educate the people, we must also teach them to understand the articulation. Now, when you listen to Bernie Sanders and Obama speak, none of them had anything concretely articulated. Obama came with change. And people, they listen to these vacuous statements. Change, change, change. Change what? He did not say anything concrete. And so we listen to these empty, vacuous statements and think like and behave like we are hearing something. And we so-called intellectuals play into it and talk about change. Change what? And we pretend that we are all so intelligent, we're talking nonsense. For example, if we're going to talk about changing this, a new system, we must say, okay, this must be a system that will serve the people. We must sit down and articulate it. We must put it on stone. Said, okay, there's going to be free education. No one will be homeless. Everyone will have be sure of food. Everyone will be sure of this, that, etc., etc. It's not just about creating a new system. Creating a new system and then continuing the same old foolishness. We must educate policemen. We must educate soldiers. Policemen must now be treated as workers. Everyone in society is a laborer, including the police. They're not. It's not us and them. I was in the military in this country once, and they court-martialed me twice. And when they court-martialed me, I said to them in court, I said, I am the one with the power. They said, what do you mean? I said, who carried the arms? I said, your title does not frighten me. They got scared, and they said, hey, he has the ability to cause mutiny, and they suggest that I be discharged because they understand that their stupid, silly, vacuous jargons did not blind me to the truth. And we must stop putting so much on people like Obama. Just say nothing. His Harvard education did not make him say anything to us, just like Hillary Clinton says nothing to us. Bill Clinton says nothing to us. And many of us fail to realize that even the so-called communism and socialism that we're talking about is not like the one in Russia. We must go back to socialism like what people experienced in Africa when everything was shared amongst the people. Everything, the goods of the country is for the people, not for a special few.
Well, you've given us quite a bit to think about. We'll take this break. Thank you, Lincoln, for your call and for your input today.
Bye.
We'll take this short break and come back to your calls at 888-874-4888. Free Your Mind Friday on Lead Stories right after this.
I can tell it's myself. Good God. You're out of unfolded and mind control. And what the Bible do to you? Doing it. Distortion is in the air. Then it's going to quit. Somebody's in the madness. They get sick and tired of it.
All right. People say, have I got a right to live? The Meters on Lead Stories. You're listening to PRN.FM, and you're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM on this day, Free Your Mind Friday. It is an open forum, and your ideas, your thoughts, your opinions, your analyses are the center of the program. And this is what we do to build community. We trade ideas, we trade thoughts, we trade our observations, and we engage in peer education. Incredible. 888-874-4888 is the number to call, and let's begin the second half of our program. One thing, though, I wanted to say, we got so many responses to the programs of this week, and I'm going to be reading some of them. Some of the reactions to you, but they're quite thorough. So I haven't yet figured out how to shorten them without basically changing or cutting short the complete thoughts of the people sending these messages. But thank you very much. It's amazing how people tell me when Jesse Jackson was running. And you can see what was happening. It was like this thing was happening in slow motion. But I could see it so clearly. And I got to tell you, despite the fact that we issued all kinds of warnings about what was going to happen and why it was important to maintain a very tight control. I'm talking about the Rainbow Coalition on this burgeoning movement. And to keep Jesse Jackson and therefore this movement in check, because it had so much potential. And this is what is so frustrating. I still consider it a victory, despite the fact that it went to ruin. But it was a calculated move on the part of Jackson, because he traded off the aggregate good for self-aggrandizing purposes. But the lesson there was about the people power. And what do people choose to do with their power, the power that they have? In every instance, they've created these monsters and left them to their own devices. And they did exactly what any politician would do. They take on this broad coalition effort as their own property to do with whatever they please. And people back away, as they have with Bernie Sanders. They back away and they leave him to his own devices. And next thing you know, all of this effort, all of this energy that should be spawning, not just dying, it should be growing. All this energy that should be filtering outward and creating pockets of new movements all over the place, it dies. Because, of course, that's what's intended. It's intended to kill off these movements, because in the end, they were born in the crucible of protest. If you kill them off, then people have to start all over again. You gain the advantage of time. It will take some time to develop to a level of momentum and a level of influence to challenge any system. So we go through these cycles all the time, which is why it's so important at this very moment to come down hard on Bernie. No, nothing personal. This is pure business. You're acting kind of funky, and we have an interest far greater than you and your candidacy and your five-point plan. We're talking about power, and we're talking about the need to inflict some kind of damage on the Democratic Party, because it has to pay for a multitude of sins. The Obama administration has been lethal to the interests of working people, and particularly people of color. The Clinton administration is going to be 10 times worse. There's no question about it. It already exhibited, the Clintons already have exhibited their traits, and they are genetic now. They're genetically coded. These people are not going to behave in any different way. I was reading today a major news story broken by the Post, the New York Post, talking about a major Clinton donor to the Clinton Foundation. Remember, we spent so long talking about the Clinton Foundation and its many shenanigans, has been given a position, a former chief of staff on the Intelligence Advisory Board, despite his experience in the field, the New York Post says. It's amazing how consistent these people are. And it seems that they are kind of just, they just gravitate toward criminal or criminal-like conduct. They're incorrigible. They cannot be rehabilitated. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. We will take your calls, and we will focus on things that you think are possible, some ideas. How do we fashion something different from the system that is doing us in? How do we get that started? Where can we start? What are some of the ideas that you have? We got some pretty good ideas already today, and we got some pretty interesting warnings as well. All right. Let's see Colorado. whether you're on the air. Hello, Colorado.
Hi, this is Tamira. Thank you for taking my call.
I didn't get the first name.
My name's Tamira. That's how I go by Fred.
Tamira.
Yes. Sure.
Okay. Thank you for calling. What have you to say today on Free Your Mind Friday?
Well, I have a lot to free my mind. I mean, everybody's speaking about really important things like education and finances and health care and all these things, but nobody's talking about a way to save money by the means and global warming. What are they spraying on us? I'm watching these airplanes come out of Utah as I drive by with no windows in them. I take pictures of these planes with no windows in them. No one wants to talk about these chemtrails. No one wants to speak publicly about chemtrails. I don't understand why.
Could you take a pause for a second and give people an idea what are chemtrails so that people could understand what they are?
Okay. From the best of my understanding and the research that I've done, chemtrails are basically, there are airplanes that go up into the sky, and they have no seats, they have kegs in them, and they have no windows, and they're being operated, to the best of my knowledge, by the highest paid military pilots next to Air Force One, who basically have no families, total disregard for life. They're spraying, to the best of my knowledge, again, is barium, strontium, polymers, bacteria, funguses, fiberglass. How come nobody's seeing these airplanes that are painting the sky? You wake up in the morning, and it's a beautiful blue day until the first plane goes by. They're not contrails. They've reconfigured the fuselages and airplanes so that they're larger and they don't create contrails. And if there is a contrail, they last like, you know, seconds. And they only, or maybe a few, look like from the ground a few feet behind the plane. They're painting circles, tic-tac-toe in the sky. And nobody wants to say anything. Can you help me understand this concept?
Well, many people, in fact, have been talking about it. And there's a growing concern about what these trails will be doing. What is the reason? What is the chemical composition, if any, that these emissions in the sky? What's going on? Have you yourself seen these kinds of military planes and chemtrails leaving?
I watched
left behind?
I have so many photographs. I'm sorry. Yes, I have so many photographs of these planes, super zoomed in, where you can see absolutely no air, no windows in them, and orange stuff flying out the back of it, which I believe is the strontium. When it's released, it's red, so you see like a flame right out the back of the engine. If you get a high power binoculars and look at them, G. Edward Griffin is doing a lot of work to help this. And I think if people would just watch Michael Moore's new film, Who Do We Invade Next, you could really get a very clear concept of where the U.S. is and why it is what it is. If you ask me, I think this is the biggest human laboratory on the planet, the United States of America, because we have every culture, every nationality, every religion that you can imagine. Where else to test everything?
Well, you've done a lot of reading, you said, and a lot of research on the subject. What is the concern from the literature? What are people saying is in these trails left behind by these planes streaking across the sky and, of course, falling down on the people below? What's the major concern?
Okay, I have several concerns. For one, I get headaches if they spray like this. I have a frontal headache by the end of the day if I don't wear a respirator. And I have ascertained that that is the cause of it, because I've had to clean up my diet. I have a very healthy diet. Anyway, blah, blah, blah. So that's one concern. Another concern is all the trees that are dying, which invite the bark beetles. Okay? So when you have all this mass, where I live in the mountains, we have massive trees, and right now, the continental divide is just brown. The trees are just dying. They're dying there on the high end, on one side where the wind blows. Okay, so the aluminum, they've done studies, the aluminum that they're spraying over Hawaii is killing the coconut trees. They've tested, there's like a three-year-old little girl that was tested the hair next to her scalp. 100% organic food, living on organic farms, has 28% aluminum in her hair from what's being sprayed. I have a three-year-old grandson. What is going to happen to his lungs and his brain? What is the aluminum doing to people's brains? The dementia, the Alzheimer's, all these diseases. You know, now we have Zika virus. We have genetically engineered mosquitoes, for Pete's sake, and then all this stuff shows up. Don't people, is there like no correlation, no understanding that, hello?
So these planes, nobody's been, not nobody, I'm sure people have, but is it generally accepted that it's just another thing that is happening and the cause for alarm is not as great as the alarm that's going off in your head, that generally people are pretty unsuspecting about it?
From my knowledge, to answer your question, from my knowledge of people that I have spoken to, it has nothing to do with the, not fear. It is just the opposite. They are terrified. They do not want to acknowledge that this is being done to them because they have no power. And I understand that. Where I speak out because I'm frustrated. And I'm not understanding where if everybody would just step forward, write their congressmen, ask their congressmen, their senators, their president, whoever's out there, don't you have children? What is going to happen to your children when they are breathing this stuff for how many years? I've been in Montana with my brother. They can't even remove a tumor from his brain, which they're making children, genetically engineered children, and they can't remove a tumor from someone's brain. I'm just really confused on this whole system. I'm educated in the medical field. I'm an EMT. I'm a retired firefighter. I'm a licensed pharmacy technician. And I do none. I don't do any of those things anymore, primarily pharmacy, because we've got to get back to what we have. Our creator gave us everything on this planet. We need to take care of ourselves. Yeah, granted, you can't make $1 billion by helping somebody with a plant growing in their backyard get well.
Well, Gary Null has been doing quite a bit of work on this and others and at PRN.fm. I haven't done a program yet on chemical trails, but I have begun reading about it, and it is concerning because it seems to be all over now. And, you know, of course, I remember seeing, you know, it looked kind of artistic. I remember growing up as a, you know, in my young adulthood, you see these streaks across the sky. And it, in a way, it was a bizarre form of art. But interestingly, people are beginning to be more and more concerned about what's going on. And I'm doing some more reading myself. So I thank you for pulling my coat again to begin reading more deeply about the subject.
Aerosol Crimes is a brilliant documentary that's available, made by a naturopath, featuring a naturopath from Santa Fe, New Mexico, who has done extensive research in this. And you can, they call it geoengineering. They're saying that they're trying to control the weather because of global warming. They tell, from what I understand, they tell the military that they're creating a shield so that other countries cannot see us. And, you know, we're going to all have to ascertain for ourselves what it's doing. I know what it does to me physically. And, I just urge people, I've made a chem buster on my property. People want to look up organite.org and learn how to make a chem buster. I have blue skies over my ranch, and there'll be clouds everywhere else. So me and another guy did that on two ends of our town, and are just trying to push all this stuff out of the area because it's not healthy for us.
Thank you for calling and sharing that.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much.
If it was healthy, they would talk about it and tell us about it. But because it's so covert, it must be bad.
Thank you very much, Tamara, for your call today. From Brooklyn, Edna, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon, Yatrice.
Good afternoon.
I logged in late this afternoon. I don't know if anyone wanted to free their mind regarding the Stanford rapist, Brock Turner, but I just, you know, I'm a little angry over this because, you know, we have young men, Brian Banks.
Before you go on, you have to give us a little context so everybody kind of knows what you're talking about. Just give us a little background.
Yes, absolutely. Brock Turner, who raped an unconscious person last year, was given a six-month sentence. I was reading yesterday where he would be let go by September 2nd, so technically it's really 3 months. But then when you look at this brother by the name of Brian Banks, he was wrongly convicted of raping someone in 2002 and served 5 years and 2 months. And the person lied, a Miss Gibson. She lied about it and was rewarded $1.5 million. But then, you know, I look at the news and I see where a young man, his name is Corey, I believe his last name is Beatty, a former Vanderbilt football player, he committed the same crime. He's up for 15 to 25 years. I mean, it's clearly about race. And it just angers me to read these headlines and see how unjust this American system is when it comes to people of color.
Why would you say it is clearly about race?
I'm looking at a Brian Banks. He was innocent. He served all this time. I'm looking at this former Vanderbilt football player. He's black. They're both black. And he's up for 15 to 25 years, where this young man, just because he's a good swimmer, he's going to Stanford, et cetera, et cetera, he gets 6 months. I mean, what else could it be?
Well, it could be many things. It could also be about prosecutorial misconduct. It could be about the disproportionate, and this brings in the racial aspect of it, the way cases are prepared, the way jurors are prepared to receive a case. And it has to do with race in the sense of who the survivor or victim is and who the alleged rapist is. That dynamic is also very important. One of the most, to me, alarming cases that I have ever covered concerned Tawana Brawley. Here's a young girl, a teenager at the time, in her mid-teens, kidnapped and held hostage in a remote area for several days over the Thanksgiving weekend. And she alleged that she was sexually assaulted over that period of time by a group of men, among whom was a local assistant district attorney and a part-time cop. Now, immediately, the machinery went to work to prove that she was a liar, that she was actually just a promiscuous person, and that she was having a sex-filled weekend with these men, and not with these particular men, but with a group, because they super-sexualized her and demonized her. And in the end, despite all the evidence, and I covered that case in great detail, all from official records, admissible in a court of law. And they all pointed to the fact that there was something really wrong with the prosecution of this case, really wrong with the investigation of this case. And we had these men, all of them were white. She was a young black teenager at the time. the dynamic would have been had there been a conviction, a vigorous investigation and conviction in this case, it probably would have been the first time in U.S. history that white males were convicted of raping a black female. So it was just not going to happen, apart from the fact that the assistant district attorney by the name of Stephen Pagonis was well-connected in Dutchess County, and he was afforded all kinds of political privileges to shield him from prosecution. Anybody looking at the case could see that it reeked with irregularities. And guess what? To this day, Tawana Brawley has to pay him, her alleged attacker and rapist, pay him for defamation. He won a defamation judgment against her. And
now that I didn't know.
All of the records clearly show that there something dramatically went wrong. Evidence was missing that should have been available. The prosecution, there were holes in it. In fact, when I interviewed the then state attorney general, Robert Abrams, he said that the case would have been better if she, in fact, had been dead. But unfortunately, she's alive. So the case is a little more difficult. I mean, I couldn't believe what I was hearing. But it's a case I wrote substantially about. But this is typical. So when you say race, it permeates not just in the dynamic of the public attitudes, but in the entire prosecutorial system. You hinted at it. How is it that you have this entirely different approach and consequence and result in one area, depending on the social status, the political connections of either the victim or survivor and the rapist? How does this happen and happen so consistently?
It's so unfair. It's just so unfair. To Corey, it was unfair to Brian, and to see this young man, Brock Turner, 3 months? Are you kidding me?
There's still a saying, well, that was the ruling of the court, so you have to respect the court, despite the fact that everybody is reacting much the same way that you're reacting. The outcry has been, there's something radically wrong here in the application or misapplication of the law. Thank you, Edna, for your call. That brings us to the end of our program today. So much brought to the table for us to consider. I thank you very much for your very frank contributions and for honoring the integrity of the program with your very high levels of engagement. Thank you so much for that. Coming up next, Alternative Visions with Dr. Jack Rasmus. Great program. You'll learn a lot. Keep it right here at prn.fm. You can reach me at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories at gmail.com. And as always, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. It's the weekend. Surround yourselves with people who bring positive dimension to your life. We'll see each other Monday. Bye-bye.